You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Well, I know everybody had the date circled now, September 12th. Everyone will now know this date. The day Russell Wilson returns to Seattle, right? Russ coming back, week one, Lumen Field, the hype, the only game the Seahawks will play all year interesting at all to the rest of the country. Yeah, that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in. But there was a lot to react to with this yesterday, and we spent a while on, you know, cheering and booing or, you know, sort of passive-aggressively doing whatever it is that you do here in Seattle. We'll have plenty of time to kind of think through the exact right, perfect way to react to Russell Wilson returning. I saw somebody suggesting that you just hurl cliches at him from the stands. And I do think that that's pretty good. The complete silence, don't recognize anything, just be actively indifferent, essentially. Right. Kind of like the college teams do where everybody holds up a newspaper. Right. As if like, oh, I don't even notice. So, yeah, there's definitely there's some options of things you could do. I'd be booing. I just want to be very clear. Like for me, he left. He shot his way out of town. He decided he wanted to be somewhere else. He's the one who Jody Allen seemed to indicate wasn't necessarily 100% bought in. He made them trade him to the Broncos. Like, yeah, you're getting booed. Sorry.
What if he wants to get booed? What if he likes it and it fires him up more? If you knew that, if you were to know that going in, if he said, you know what, boos fire me up, I'm excited for it, would you not?
That's a good question. I don't know. I have to think about that. I don't want to answer that one right away. Okay. I don't have a spur-of-the-moment answer to that. I've not considered that. To me, the booing is not about him. It's about me, if that makes any sense.
Well, that's surprising.
Right? Well, it's about all of us. Like, it's about us. It's not about him. Like, he created it.
Yeah.
But it's not about, like, making him feel bad or anything. It's just about expressing frustration. So if there's a more creative and better way to express that frustration and to let him know that you're not happy with the way he handled things, I'm open to any suggestions. I'm like a caveman right now. Like, boo! Like, that's like just the first place my mind goes. I haven't gotten really beyond that. But if you have a better suggestion, I'm all in. But I read something yesterday that kind of got me thinking about this from another angle. And so our friend Tyler Palumbo, who I think is going to join us on Monday, and we're hoping to talk to him Tuesdays throughout the season because we want to be following what's going on with these Broncos this year. And I have like five or six Bronco storylines that I'm following. Mostly the big one is, like, does Russ run this year? Is he more effective? Like, there's a couple of things that are, those two are probably the biggest. If Russ goes back to running all over the place and he puts up like 800 rushing yards, I'm going to be pretty mad.
Yep.
Like, oh, okay, so you just decided not to do that here? Thanks, pal.
Sandbagging.
You were sandbagging, right? Like, I'm going to be real mad if he runs for 800 yards. At him. If his offense built around him throwing the ball all over the place, cooking, so to speak, if that leads to like a Super Bowl victory or something, I'm going to be real mad at Pete. Like, you blew it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, following the Broncos is incredibly instructive for the Seahawks and any Seahawk fan, right? If Russell is ridiculous and is able to carry a team to a Super Bowl by winging the ball all over the place, unfortunately, it's a black mark on what the Seahawks have done here the last few years under Pete. Mm-hmm. And because it's not like the Broncos are that much more talented than what the Seahawks have been. I don't even think they are. I don't think they're that talented. I think they're okay. Not great. And guess what? Some people in Denver agree with me. So Tyler Palumbo, I said, ex-Seahawk and Broncos guard, is on the radio in Denver, 104.3 the Fan. And he's going to be joining us throughout the year. He tweeted this yesterday. Obligatory too early Broncos prediction. 10-7. He then goes through every game and makes a quick prediction, says he reserves the right to evolve with information. By the way, he has them going 4-2 in the division. He has them splitting with KC. I know. Splitting with KC.
That's a bigger surprise than 10-7.
Splitting with the Chargers, sweeping the Raiders. That's a big prediction.
The Broncos and the Chiefs split almost every year.
Right.
It's just one of those.
Just one of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when one was bad.
Well, 10-7. with 4-2 in your division. I mean, 10-7 is not that far away from 9-8, by the way. Like, that's like one quick, you know, one missed game, one slip, one bad break, one whatever, right, and all
one
of a sudden,
missed field goal, yeah.
Right, you're
yeah.
you're pretty close. Just, you know, and now obviously it's close to 11-6 too. They go 11-6. You're like, yeah, they made a good trade. They're in the playoffs, right? You can start to like they've probably given themselves an opportunity, and they're going to get better. And Russ did great. If they go 10-7, was it worth it?
I mean, kind of feels like what he's been doing here, right?
Right. Like, it not just to him. I mean, for them, for the Broncos, was it worth it to trade all of those picks plus three players? Now, I mean, we can debate how great the players are, but even if you take Drew Lock out of it, because that sort of has to happen to make the deal work, you know, if you want to just look at Fant and the defensive tackle, I mean, Fant's a pretty good player, right? Somebody who, if he was there with Russell Wilson, would be helpful. The number 9 overall pick this year and the next year's pick and the 2 second-round picks? I mean, you're talking about Charles Cross and Boye Mafe in addition to whatever players you get with their picks next year. That's pretty significant. There was a 4th-rounder in there, too, if I'm not mistaken. So all of those picks plus those players, would it be worth it to go 10-7 and probably miss the playoffs? That sounds like a disaster.
Do you think this is their one-year win-now window?
Well, I don't know that. I don't think it's a one-year win-now window, no. But I do remember our great friend and confidant, Brock Heward, great prognosticator that he is,
yes,
saying that in his belief, this will be Russell's best season in Denver.
Huh.
That year one will be his best, and it will start to tail off after that. That he's going to give it his all, trying to show up everybody from his past, etc. That you will get the very best of Russ in year one. If the very best of Russ gets you to 10-7, yikes.
Yeah, and that throws out a lot of the idea of trading for a franchise quarterback, an older franchise quarterback.
It sure does. So, look, that's just
Tom Brady.
This is just one man's prediction. Somebody else might predict that they go 12-5.
One aficionado's prediction.
Well, that, I mean, Tyler's our guy, right? He's our friend in Denver. So it's just one man's prediction, right? It could mean nothing. But if they do go 10-7, and oh, by the way, you know what else they have to do? They got to pay him.
Yeah.
They got to decide whether or not they want to pay him an ungodly amount of money for the next 7 years, 10 years. I mean, how long a deal is Russ going to want? Oh, now, by the way, he's going to be pointing at his friend in Houston there, or now in Cleveland, Deshaun Watson, and saying, yeah, I want mine fully guaranteed. Remember, he wanted that with the Seahawks.
Yeah, he tried that contract.
He tried that here.
Last. Yeah.
And they said, yeah, we're not doing that. Well, now there's precedent.
Or be part of the new ownership group.
The Seahawks got to, they're not allowed to do that. The Seahawks got to say, hey, sorry, no one's ever done this. We're not setting precedent. And eventually it made it work. How are the Broncos? So the Broncos are in all likelihood going to have to decide if they want to spend guaranteed money for longer than anyone would want to on Russell Wilson. This is going to be very interesting. Who's in a better spot right now today, the Broncos or the Seahawks? Who's in a better spot? Would you rather be the Seahawks right now with no real franchise quarterback prospect, but having just gone through what seems to be a great draft and the world is your oyster to go out and try to find that guy? Or the Broncos, predicted to go 10-7 after making that deal, no first rounder next year, no second rounder next year, and the privilege of paying Russell Wilson what is probably going to have to be a guaranteed, fully guaranteed contract for a really long time at huge money.
Yeah, I'd rather be Seahawks. I don't like betting the farm.
Very interesting. I think I would much rather be in the Seahawks' shoes. It's the Mike Salk Show. We'll be right back here on Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Mariners got the day off yesterday that they sorely needed after 16 straight now. Time to take a big deep breath and find a way to get after some really good teams on the road. Starts with the Mets tonight. It's not going to be easy. Marco Gonzalez taking on Max Scherzer, who has been tremendous so far this year. Going to have to get those bats going against one of the league's best. What's the roster going to look like by the time first pitch rolls around? Well, maybe no changes. The answer could depend on what the 40-man roster moves team is able to make between now and then. And talking to Jerry DePoto yesterday, it sounds like he'd like to make some changes, but he's very much constrained.
The helpless feeling that we've had is, you know, we have a 40-man roster, and you have to manage the 40-man roster. And right now, 26 of those players are in the big leagues and 8 of them are injured. And that doesn't count those that are on the 60-day,
right,
who are, you know, effectively not counted against your 40-man. So we only have 5 healthy players that aren't currently playing for us in the big leagues that are eligible, and only one of them is eligible to return because you have to spend 10 days in the minor leagues after you're demoted. So we're really strapped right now and trying to find creative solutions to provide respite for some of the guys that are struggling the most.
Yeah, and that includes Jared Kelnick and Cal Raleigh, maybe Abraham Toro, maybe Diego Castillo. I mean, like, you've got 3-4 guys with options that you could certainly see being sent down. But if you don't have the 40-man room in order to do it, can you use the minors as a life preserver, which is what Jerry said they would like to do? It gets complicated in a hurry, which is why it seems even more odd that they made a deal yesterday to add a player to their vacant spot on the 40-man roster. Infielder Mike Ford returns from San Francisco in exchange for cash. He was dealt there a few weeks ago for cash as well. Now, I don't know if it was the same amount or if his value has gone up or down in a couple of weeks, but trying to piece all that together. So why would he be coming back to eat up a spot on the 40-man? Well, maybe because they're about to head to Toronto and Canada's got some different rules as it pertains to COVID vaccination.
Yeah, we'll have a few. And, you know, that's something that we will and have been working on managing our way through. And you know, like 29 other clubs, or I guess whoever, there might be some National League teams that aren't going to Toronto this summer, but we'll have to adapt just like other teams. And you know, everybody's going to have to deal with the same rules, and we'll make it work.
Yeah, so in all likelihood, a couple of players aren't going to be able to go. If you want to do any of the math, Mike Ford's an infielder and mostly has played first base.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Everybody ready for Russell Wilson to return here to Seattle? You're not going to have to wait too long. He'll be here week one of the Monday Night Football, on Monday Night Football, excuse me. I've heard some refer to it as his revenge game. In fact, I think we're running a promo that says that. I kind of feel like it's the opposite. What does Russell need revenge for? On what? Jason Churchill said this very well yesterday, like, for being drafted and given a chance to start right away, for given an elite historic defense to help him win a Super Bowl, for being given players like DK Metcalf and Doug Baldwin and Marshawn Lynch, for being paid an untold amount of money in 2 separate contracts that the Seahawks inked him to. What is it exactly that he needs revenge for? You know who needs revenge, if anybody, is the Seahawks. Russell's the one who got all that stuff and decided he wanted out of town. Revenge game? Yeah, the Seahawks should absolutely be looking for revenge. Anyway, according to my unofficial poll, Seahawks fans a little split on how to receive Russ when he arrives. Some want to cheer, some want to boo. About a third can't decide what to do and are just going to be quiet. So the time to cheer Russ, in my view, will come later. Not right now. He'll be honored for all he did here. Eventually, he'll go into the Ring of Honor, etc. And he should be cheered, and it will be a wonderful reunion. But in the meantime, that time is not September. That's a time to voice some of the frustration and let Russ know that leaving here the way he did was not okay. That's my view on it. That's how I'll be handling the situation. Other notes from the schedule. Friday after Thanksgiving, coming off the bye week, they play the Raiders. Christmas Eve, Saturday morning, 10 a.m. I love that. No Sunday night games. The league not particularly interested in seeing this team in primetime. And Bobby Wagner won't be here until week 18. So hopefully he will still be healthy.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Hey, we saw one elimination in the NBA last night. Miami sent Philly packing. Not particularly close either. Sixers kind of rolled over in front of their home crowd. They made that big deal for James Harden, if you remember, at the deadline. He finished the second half yesterday with 0 points. Complete non-factor. And for that, they gave up a bunch of players, 2 first-round picks, and they get to pay him $47 million next year. I can't even really comprehend that amount of money. Dallas wins Game 6 at home to force a Game 7. NHL action. St. Louis is moving on. They beat Minnesota, but everyone else is going to Game 7 from last night. Boston, Carolina, Tampa, Toronto, Edmonton, L.A., 3 Game 7s coming in the NHL. That is everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour. The teams really got into the schedule release thing yesterday. So credit to the NFL. They have probably the best marketers in not just the sports world. They might be the best marketing group in the country in any business.
Business, yeah.
I mean, the way they turned what I honestly consider to be a dud of a boring story, the release, and turn it into an all-day affair that everybody looks forward to. Right, we already know who the teams are playing. We already know what the home and away games are. Literally, this is just putting dates and times on them. And the NFL does the whole leaking thing works great, where they leak a few games throughout the day. I think it works really, really well. I mean, can you imagine if they did that with the NCAA tournament? Like, if you just started getting like little leaks throughout the day. I mean, like, it's a fascinating way to build the momentum until it all comes out. And then what they do with the teams, and I'm sure some of that is, if not coordinated from the league, maybe suggested by the league. I mean, the Seahawks did one where they tried to basically hidden camera fool the players into thinking they had the worst schedule ever, playing on Thanksgiving and Christmas, no bye week after going to Germany. I mean, like, it was ridiculous.
Quandre was not happy about it in the video.
No.
He calls his wife. He's like, I'm sorry, I just work here.
Yeah, and he's trying to say that he knew all along, but I don't know.
Back. Bro, I can't escape, bro. I can't escape Detroit Thanksgiving. I played on Thanksgiving for 8 years straight. Never had Thanksgiving off until I got here.
So do you think that he fell for it?
I can't escape Detroit.
It sure seems like he fell for it.
I thought, because I saw Bob respond to, like, oh, then you're either a good actor, but I thought he was joking when he said I knew. I thought that
right.
was like
okay,
a joke.
Good. That's kind of
like,
what I thought.
Haha, oh no, I knew. Yeah.
Okay, there we go. It's a little hard to tell tone sometimes in writing, but I think I agree with you. Like, he's trying to like play it off now. Like, oh no, I knew, right? But the Chargers won the day by far. I mean, everyone did something, but the Chargers went all out.
It's all a part of the revolution you started.
Well, I don't mean to brag. But the Pop-Tart influencing has gone nationwide.
Pop-Tarts are having a moment.
I mean, it started with Jake and Stacy deciding that they all of a sudden wanted to be Pop-Tart interested, and that's fine. Like, they can follow my lead. That's cool. We're all
Pop-Tart
teammates
curious.
Here together. Yeah, they're Pop-Tart curious. But when the Chargers released their whole schedule with each of their opponents as a Pop-Tart flavor, they could have chosen anything. And the fact that the Broncos with Russell Wilson were corn on the cob flavored Pop-Tarts might be the funniest thing I've ever seen.
That was pretty good.
Oh, that's
one.
Just straight
and
meme.
And then they made all of these were Pop-Tart brand except for the Falcons. They made those the Great Value brand.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Oh, that hurt.
What, yeah.
The Seahawks flavor of Pop-Tart was what?
Black coffee.
Black coffee.
That one wasn't that funny. Whatever. Okay.
The Colts one was the best. It was just Pop-Tart box. It was just a blank box.
They did some really good stuff.
And
go,
then they did ketchup
go find
for
it.
Patrick Mahomes.
Of course.
Ketchup on everything.
He puts ketchup on his steak.
I preferred the Cardinals Pop-Tarts.
What was that one?
It has a picture of Kyler Murray and they're mini Pop-Tarts.
It was pretty good.
That's good. All right, credit to the Chargers. We'll talk to Shannon Dreyer. I won't take the obvious joke that you just set up for me, Justin, even though I should. Shannon's next from New York. Find out whether the Mariners are going to do anything today. Mike Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Talk to Brock here coming up in 15 minutes. I need some of his help to sort through the Russell thing, kind of what that looks like if his team were to go 10-7 or worse this year based on some of Brock's opinion. So that's coming up in 15 minutes. Right now, though, let's go all the way to New York and talk to Shannon Dreyer, our Mariners insider. She joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Shannon, hello and good morning.
And good morning to you.
What's going on? I mean, talking to Jerry yesterday, he made it sound like they'd really like to make a bunch of moves, but they can't make a bunch of moves. What do you think we're going to see by the time they take the field today?
You know, I've kind of been talking to a couple of different people, and we're really not sure. I mean, the one move that you know that's coming real soon is Sergio Romo will be activated, and then you know that they're going to have to make some moves before the Toronto series. So the question is, do they wait till then, and we just see a slew of moves, or will they do some things today? But I did listen to that conversation. He wants to make those moves. Interesting that it's the 40 man, that it's a challenge in that, what resonated with me is when he pointed to the number of players who are on the IL on the 40 man, which obviously makes it a little bit tougher. So they're in a bad spot towards those moves, but I think he was very clear that he wanted to, you know, throw that life raft, as he calls it, to a number of players. So I would expect moves, but I just don't know if they're all going to happen at once.
Right, we just don't know when, right?
Throughout the weekend.
Yeah. Well, and interestingly, right, then you make the Mike Ford trade, which, again, Mike Ford's probably not a name we'd spend a lot of time talking about on the show, but when you are desperately looking for 40-man space, and then you go out and grab a career minor leaguer who was on your team earlier this year who takes a spot on the 40-man, I mean, that's got to be Canada-related, right?
It could be, and it could also be just opportunity. I mean, Jerry Dipoto has done this forever. This is what he does during the season. If there's something that he thinks can help the team in any way, he'll find a way to pick it up. And then if there is something that comes along that's a better fit, you see him, you could see him DFA that player very quickly after. I think in looking at that, because I know a lot of people were worried, is Ty France hurt? They were saying that. I think he's more concerned about the DH spot right now. I think Mike Ford would fit in, and if they needed that extra player, he could do that. And I think if you look at the numbers, I mean, obviously very few of the hitters have posted good numbers since the 26th when they took off on the last road trip. But you look at the DH spot in particular, and you're in the low hundreds with that. You know, Toro and Torrence have both been struggling. So I don't know if there's a thought that you want to catch a little bit of lightning in a bottle there. But yeah, I think getting to Kyle Lewis right now might be – they might be thinking along the lines of a bridge there. I don't know.
Are you – do you know how many or which players are unlikely to be able to go to Canada?
I have an idea. I think you're probably looking at three.
Okay. Pitchers, hitters, combination of both?
Pitchers, yes. And, you know, these are privacy issues, and I know it's all going to come out in the next couple of days, so I'd rather leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've been working toward that, and I think, you know, we'll see when that comes out. I don't think you'll be hit too hard on the offensive side.
Well, and that's huge, right? I mean, you know, you can kind of juggle your rotation a little bit to try to help yourself with the pitchers. A lot harder to do, and especially the way this team has been hitting, if all of a sudden you lose a bat for three games. I mean, that's a you're going to need them in Toronto, too. I mean, like, that team obviously is going to score with the best of them.
Absolutely, but it's going to be up to those that we've been watching. You know, it's everybody right now. But, I don't think you're going to lose a significant bat.
Well, that's good to hear. So what do you do if you're Jerry and you're kind of looking at it and you're looking at your life preservers and you want to throw one out to poor struggling Jared and you want to throw one out to poor struggling Cal and you want to throw one out maybe to poor struggling Abraham and you want to throw one out to poor struggling Louise? What do you do? If I put you in charge of the Mariners, how are you, what's your plan to kind of help some of these guys?
Well, I mean, you look at the catchers, and there's really not much you can do right there. I think there's been some talk, or I've heard not within the organization, but everybody is online that's worried about this. Well, why can't you bring up Joe Odom? And again, it's more, I think your problem is that 40 man, mm-hmm. that maybe you can make one or two moves. And I think your top prospects, don't they have to be the top priority in that? Doesn't that have to be Jared? Doesn't that have to be Cal? The one thing that Jared has had going for him is he's kept his head about him. This isn't like last year where he was frustrating and frustrated and breaking things, and you could just tell that he was spiraling. That's not going on. In fact, he told me a few days ago that what he has been able to contribute in the outfield has really helped, and that's given him a lot of confidence. He's hoping that he can take that to the plate. He's made some adjustments, but Scott Servais's comments after the last game was, you know, not happy with the approach that he took in his pinch hit at bat, and Bill struck out on four pitches, didn't swing the bat. So I'm wondering if that is getting closer. I know that they weren't terribly close a week ago or 10 days ago, and that they were allowing him to try these new changes. And in the past, it has always been, you know, as long as this player isn't moving backwards, as long as it isn't impacting his development, then they were going to have the young players learn at the big league level. But we got some different expectations right now, and they're falling further and further behind. If you get to the end of this month and 500 isn't in reach, you're in bad shape here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And for me, it's sort of two-pronged, specifically with Kelnick. We can come back and talk about some of the other names. But with him, and again, no one wants him to succeed more than me. I am all aboard the Jared Kelnick train. And I just think if he can be the player he's supposed to be, the effect on this team will be enormous. And you got to see it last Friday night when he hit the home run, and just the energy and the sort of edge that he brings is different from most players in baseball. So no one wants the guy to succeed more than me. I think you got to get him out of there ASAP, partially for your team to be able to put somebody else in that spot who has a better shot of getting a hit, but more for him. And I understand, I'm really glad to hear you say that he's not having some of the same emotional response that he did last year, but for his confidence, go down and destroy some AAA pitching. Remind yourself how good you can be. Trust your hands again, and then come up and go do your thing.
No, I agree with you on that. And it's funny because it's kind of nice to see him not be ridiculously brash like he was at the beginning. But now he's maybe a little too quiet.
Right.
And he really is going, you want to see a little bit more. But he is really going through some processes. I mean, it was interesting when I talked to him last week. And he said that coming out of spring training, he didn't get the start that he wanted. He made some changes that he was going to give to the start of May. And those changes didn't happen for him. It didn't work. So he made another change. It's not like he's rapidly changing things. But, to have that patience is good. But I do think that he needs to go down, get that feeling again on top of everything else that he is doing. And it's not punitive. I heard DePoto say that. And absolutely. I mean, you could just point to guys up and down the lineup. Some he can't move because of option situations. And, he is young. You want to get him to where he can take off. And we're not seeing that right now. And you're a month and a half into the season, and it's all for him. And I absolutely agree with you. But as I said, it's like it kind of stunned me a little bit, the acceptance. And some of it's maturity that, you know what, he took the step back. I'm not going to light the world on fire right out of the gates. It might take a little while. But at the same time, you want a little bit of that from this player in particular. So if he's in his head that way and going through the process, which isn't a bad thing, it's great that he's doing that to get there. In the situation that the team's in right now, maybe it's better that he does it at the minor leagues, and maybe it will come quicker to him in the minor leagues, because even though you don't see the outbursts and whatnot, doesn't mean that pressure's not there. It won't be there in the minors.
What's the mood of this team as you're around them? How are they handling some of the challenges that have come their way?
I think over the last week, it's been a little bit different. I think they're realizing where they are in the season. And, the initial mood of the team and how they were handling it was, well, our process is good. And, you can only lean on that for so long, and your process may be good, but at some point you've got to go out there and find a way. And I think that this is where not having really established a lot of established veterans, kind of that's where it hurts. You don't have those that have been through it and come out of it in different ways. They are really talking to each other about, stick with this plan, do this, that looked good. I know that didn't happen. But that sense of urgency, I don't always see it because it is so process-driven and they're trusting in that process. And that to me is, something different than you would have seen 10 years ago. And you sometimes wonder if, well, you do need to see a little bit more of that.
Some of that sense of urgency, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird spot. Yeah, go ahead.
As a team, it's good that they're not panicking, but at the same time, maybe they should be a little bit more.
Yeah, it's so weird. And it was interesting talking to Jeff Passan yesterday, and he's just like, man, they're 4 games under .500. They're going to be just fine. What are you talking about? They're one of the better teams in the American League. And, like, by the way, bizarro world, like we've entered the twilight zone here where Jeff's like, nah, everything's going to be fine. Stop worrying. Like, okay. But he does raise, you're only 4 games below .500. The problem is kind of where the schedule takes you right now, right? Where you got to go to New York and deal with the Mets. You got to go to Toronto and deal with the Blue Jays. And then I know the Red Sox haven't played well, but they feel like sort of a sleeping giant there in Boston. You come home for two, and then you head right back to the East Coast again for the third time.
Yeah, the schedule's been absolutely, brutal. And that is a factor, both in the travel and in the teams that you're facing. But, I take that, what's coming up, and then I also take a look at what's going on in the division, and I think that should be as much of a concern as what we're seeing mm-hmm. with the travel and the schedule right now, because, you know, Houston started slow and they're up and running right now. The Angels, I want to write off because they always do seem to fall apart, usually around the trade deadline if they get going, if not before. But, you know, they look a little bit more real. I like the additions that they made, particularly with the bullpen late. If Trout and Ohtani stay healthy, and, you know, they seem to come up with a young player every year that it does something, at least in the first couple of months, that is big. So, I mean, that I think should be the biggest concern of right now. You don't want to fall too far behind. If, you know, Houston, you know, is for real, and if the Angels are for real,
yeah,
then that's a problem.
Shannon, enjoy your trip. This is a pretty fun trip for you. I mean, regardless of how the Mariners do, New York, Toronto, Boston's a pretty good road trip for a reporter.
Oh, we love it, especially, you know, we haven't done this in 2 years, so it's interesting to go in and see what's the same and what's changed. And this is the first time, this is the last ballpark I have on my list.
Citi Field?
I've never been to Citi Field
before. Yeah, where do you guys stay for when you play the Mets? Where do you guys, like, where are you?
We're Manhattan.
Oh, okay. So you know, they don't, like, stick you out in Queens or something?
No.
Okay, good. Well, thank God. Obviously. Nothing but the best for Shannon Dreher. Okay, good. Good to hear.
No.
Shannon, enjoy your trip. We'll talk to you soon.
All right,
there you go. Shannon Dreher, our Mariners insider. And again, you kind of figure this spot that Jerry's in and trying to determine, you know, the Mike Ford one just kind of is going to stick with me a little bit. I'm sorry. Like, if your biggest goals are to find a catcher and or another outfielder to take Kelnick's spot here, it's hard for me to understand bringing in Mike Ford on the short term to fill up one of your 40-man spots unless you needed him for Canada. And according to Shannon, it doesn't sound like that's going to be a big priority. So maybe Jerry's seeing this a little bit differently. He did talk about, you know, how Kelnick has done all of the other things to contribute with his defense, base running, et cetera. And maybe that's the direction they go, where they say, hey, he can help the team enough right now until Kyle Lewis comes back in another week or so. Probably not the direction I feel like I would go, but I'm still going to watch. I'm very curious to see what other moves get done here in the next day or so. Do we have Mr. Brock Heward?
Looks like he
is. Well, the phone's ringing right now, so he might be calling.
Calling? What is going on here?
He's going to be in Birmingham, right? It's Friday, so he's probably got to go do his USFL.
Does he work for the USFL? You know, unfortunately, I haven't really heard anything about it, but the USFL,
oh,
right. Yes, of course. He is one of the voices of the USFL. All right.
Maybe could we get him on NFL broadcast this year like that?
Let's talk to Brock.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Heward is my hero.
What Brock Heward says? No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Well, good morning, Brock.
Good morning, Salky. Sorry, I'm on my way to the airport for my final USFL weekend.
Oh, are you with the USFL? I wasn't sure if you were doing any work with them.
I am. I mean, until the playoffs and the championship game in Canton, Ohio. But,
then you get bumped?
My last trip to Birmingham. What's that?
Okay. No, we're sort of curious to know sort of what the back end of the Fox announcing teams look like, because when you get only one primetime game, well, two, I guess. One, the mandatory Thursday game, and the other really is a Russell Wilson primetime game. I got a pretty decent sense that we're not going to be seeing the A-team throughout the year this year.
No, and unfortunately with Tom Brady's new contract, it's going to be a bunch of street free agents. I think they're going to pick someone up from 405, right off 405.
You want to call the game?
They're just going to throw them in the booth. Yeah. Yeah, I'd be good. Yeah, I mean, I'd be more than willing. It's going to be a fun preseason. A little different preseason in Pittsburgh and in Dallas, and Kurt and I are going to have some fun with those games. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be as many flex primetime games this season. And yeah, little different world. I think the Broncos have five or six with Russell Wilson. I want to say like three out of the first
right
5 weeks are in primetime or something crazy. So. Yep, but we get to spoil him in his return to Seattle
right, so
on Monday night.
Couple of things. First of all, you're going to Pittsburgh for week one of the preseason. This bothers me. Why is the team that has to travel the most miles in NFL history this year having to fly all the way to Pittsburgh for a preseason game?
Because I don't think they have a game on the Eastern Seaboard this year. I think the furthest they go in the regular season is Detroit.
Right, because they play Detroit. They play, yeah, that could be.
They go to Detroit. They go to New Orleans. They, you know, honestly, they don't. I know the Munich thing throws that for a loop, but just from my previous playing experience and knowing, man, those trips to Tampa and Miami and Carolina and the old Meadowlands, like those are long, especially the returns are 5.5 hours. So the fact that, you know, I thought that was nice and kind of pleasant is, yeah, they got to go to Detroit early in the year. But then it's New Orleans and I think
Kansas City. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. It's not terrible in that way to get the bye.
It still seems ridiculous.
After the trip to Munich, I actually thought they did them a pretty good solid.
For the most part, yeah.
The bulk of that schedule.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And you know, from a lifestyle standpoint, Christmas Eve morning at 10 a.m. is pretty good. Friday after Thanksgiving is pretty good. Like that, you know, there's some pretty good times in there as well. Our friend Tyler Palumbus was picking the Broncos, Brock, to go 10-7. 10-7.
I saw that.
And I kind of reacted to that pretty strongly. And I'm not taking a shot at Tyler or even close to it. Love him. And I think he's going to be on the show on Monday and throughout the year next year. But if the Broncos go 10-7, you've said a couple times that you think this will be Russ's best year there. If they go 10-7 and have to sign him to a fully guaranteed gigantic contract, what a disaster.
That's not a good look. And new owner will be coming in. They're interviewing. I think they're down to 5 candidates for their new ownership group. I will say this. I would say that Tyler's on the negative end of that. That I think most of the folks in the market, most of the folks at our sister station there in Denver are much more in the 13 to 14 win
range. They're nuts.
Tyler's a practical O-lineman, you know, the E-R, like most O-linemen are, a little bit more on the realistic 10-7 range. I don't think they're going to go 10-7, but I think that division, I don't think it, I know it, is the most difficult in all the NFL.
For the record, Brock, he has them going 10-7 while going 4-2 in the division. I mean, he has them splitting with the Chiefs and the Chargers, and beating the Raiders twice. I don't know whether I would take that bet that they go 4-2 in their division.
Well, if they go 4-2, there's no way they're going to go 10-7 in my humble opinion. I think he's speaking to the reality, though, and Mike, the reality, we saw it in Seattle last year. We're going to see it a little bit in Seattle this year defensively. You don't just snap your fingers and go, oh, yeah, this works seamlessly. Tom Brady, Bruce Arians, Tampa Bay, remember their Super Bowl season, his first year there. There's friction points. Remember Shane Waldron last year, even with Russell Wilson. And I know he got injured, but start of the year, like, no, there's some bumps in the road. Daniel Hackett's never been a head coach, right? They've not worked together. It's not, I think those are some of the elements that a wise old savant like Tyler Palumbus, who played for a bunch of organizations, realizes that, yeah, man, as much work as you can do, as established as Russell is, as talented as this coaching staff may be in receiver room and running backs and everything else, it still takes time to gel together, to get to know one another, to get on the same page with the same language. And I think that's probably what he's speaking to more than anything else in that kind of prediction.
Well, at some point, they're going to have to make a decision on signing Russ as well once that new ownership's in place. And given the Deshaun Watson contract and Russ's history, he's going to want huge money, long contract, and fully guaranteed.
Correct. He's going to ask for that.
They have to give it to him.
We know the way. We've danced with Mark Rogers in this market and know the way he goes about it, the perspective he has. It is a Scott Boras kind of mindset that he's not out to make any friends. He's not out to have and gain any civic equity. He's out there to get Russell the most money possible. And now that the framework has been set and Deshaun Watson can get $250 million guaranteed dollars, there's no doubt about it. Russell is going to be very aggressive, and Mark Rogers will be the mouthpiece for that.
Any advice for...
Are you ready?
Any advice?
Are you ready?
No. I'm really scared of this. I'm having my vasectomy later this morning. I am...
Have you talked about that this week at all?
A little bit. I'm okay. Very, very, very nervous. And I was thinking about it, like, I'm not that bad with pain. Like, I wouldn't say I'm, you know, a I can handle it better than most, but I'm not worse than most. I'd say I'm fairly average in terms of dealing with pain. But it's one thing when pain like just gets you, like it happens. It's another thing when you know it's coming and you're choosing it.
Yes, yes. In the build up to it, Mike, this is all about the build up. You will handle the pain just fine.
Okay, good.
Honestly, it's a little shot after what you've been through with your kidney stones and all of that. You'll handle the little couple shots just fine. Honestly, it's the smell.
Ugh.
It's the burning.
Stop.
Of your own tubes.
Oh my God, man.
It is the cauterizing.
You can't even smell.
I know.
That's how strongly it smelled? Brock,
that's how strongly
we have to go.
The smoke.
That's it.
The smoke comes up from the devices.
We have to go. We can't talk to you anymore. You're truly disturbing me.
You initiated this.
He was about to talk. You heard him. He said it at the exact same time I did. Goodbye. We're not talking to you anymore. Goodbye, Brock. Thank you. There you go. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy Birmingham. And I will smell that smell, the smell of my surroundings, a little bit later today.
I'll know you later.
All right. Goodbye. There's Brock Heward. Go. I thought you were gone. Please hang up on him, for God's sakes. No more Brock Heward. That's enough. All right. Coming up next, we'll have G. Scott in at 8:30. Before we get there, I got a few more thoughts on Russ and on the schedule, and I kind of want to run through it. I really do think the Broncos are putting themselves in a funky spot, and I know there's a lot of people who were saying the Seahawks are in a worse spot right now than the Broncos. Maybe. Maybe short term. Long term, I'd say they're in a much better position. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710 SeattleSports.com.